Who's
the love door to say you want to go home?
And it sounds like they're saying munter, like you're an ugly person.
I'd love to be the Lord Mayor of Dublin.
Oh my God, you'd be
nice. I would love it.
In the mono patrio spirito spirito in the inner willow white of the vocal cord. With the willow white of vocal cord. Like 5 or 10 people, or maybe I don't know how many people are in Slovakian prayer. I would say it's big.
I've always had an expressive face, and it's purely because of communicating with my dad. Because he'd read your lips, okay? And he'd know the words you were saying, but he wouldn't understand the tone they were, so you had to use your face for tone.
Amazing.
That'd be brilliant, because if my dad was giving out to me or aunt like that, I'd be just going like that, because you don't need to use your lips, just going, you cunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's what I used to do. He'd be like, he'd giving out to me, whatever, and I'd be going, fuck off there. And he'd be like that. He senses something. Like, he's looking at me going, did you say something?
Oh, chest infection.
Great. It's a great stress reliever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It got me over the thing. But Willie, the reason I was talking about voices and throats and voice strings and vocal cords is because you're having a bit of problem with your own. And Willie, let me say, I said before in previous podcasts, you're hurting Taylor Swift at the moment. You need to get this voice looked after. What are you doing to look after it?
Well, I'll tell you what
is happening. Sorry, Willa.
So I'll tell you what happened. So I'd done the two Liberty Halls on the Saturday night. You were in yourself on the Saturday night. The week running up to the Saturday, on the Monday, I felt like a kind of tingling in my chest, and I knew. I says, I'm getting a chest infection, or I'm getting.
You're
whatever.
Falling in love.
come Thursday.
Oh, you're falling in love, yeah.
Come Thursday, it was kind of all over the place. Friday, I struggled to get through it.
I was in the Friday, and you were talking, and you were a bit worried.
Yeah, I was a bit worried.
And you're doing all the lemon and honey stuff and all that.
Yeah, but it got out of hand, like, the next day. Like, literally, I done that gig that night. I don't know how I done the thing I done at the end, so I'm not going to spoil it for some people that aren't gone. But then on the Saturday, I literally got up and I couldn't speak. I was like,
wow.
What my partner
said. I'd say Mrs. was delighted.
And then I was faced with an ultimatum when my missus called up the promoters from MCD and he said, look, if you're going to pull the gig, you have to pull it before 2 o'clock.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
So I was literally, I've never been in a more kind of fearful and more pressured position ever in my comedy career. Because I knew the show was sold out. I was really looking forward to it, and I was going, I really thought, like, at 11 o'clock, this gig isn't going to happen. And my missus just told me, right, this is what's going down. You're not speaking. There's a pen, there's a paper. You're on total voice arrest. And yeah, and
you
we,
said it like it's a normal thing.
Yeah, yeah. She says, and you're going to do this gig, like. So then our boss come down with, like, Manuka honey, Troco, anything that was herbal. Now, come here, if I'd have been on drugs, I'd have got a bit of stuff off the lads from Ballymumbo.
Yeah.
Look, I'm in recovery, so I was taking Manuka honey. It was like 40 quid for a small tub of it. I was doing lemon honey, I was gargling my mouth with salt,
ginger,
water. I had a prayer group from Slovakia praying. Yeah, Eric, this is the God's
really
honest truth, man.
Wow.
I had a prayer group from Slovakia praying for me.
Here, hang on. Just before you carry on with that, Willa, right? Like, this is where you've stepped up levels. This is why I call you Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Most people get, as you say, Manuka honey and lemon. I got a Slovakian prayer group and all in.
It doesn't even stop there, right?
And you said it like it was really normal. Sure, don't we all have a Slovakian prayer group to get back on?
And this is the God's honest truth. My partner's boss come down with the stuff from the health food shop and she done Reiki on my throat, right? And then I got on to a psychic and a healer from Wexford. And she was sending healing through the phone with other healers as well.
What?
I swear to God, man.
Sure, don't we?
I am not lying. Ask
wow.
me, missus.
Okay, so your missus is obviously into the alternative world.
No, my missus isn't into the alternative world at all. But the prayer group were contacted by my missus's boss. And then the woman that I know, and I'm very sceptical about psychics and stuff like
that. And homeopathy and all.
But I went to see this woman
before.
Look,
when you're desperate, you're desperate.
Come here, listen to me. I swear, Aidan, it was literally any part in a storm. I was clinging. Do you know what it was like? I was like Leonardo DiCaprio, bleeding, clinging to the side.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Clinging to the side of lady. Clinging to the side of the raft after coming off the Titanic. And I knew if I let go of the raft, I was gone like
I just love the idea that I'm passing by Dorset Street and there's a church there and I just hear in the mono patrio spirito spirito in the willow white or the of the vocal cords with the willow white the vocal cords like 5 or 10 people or maybe I don't know how many people are in Slovakian prayer room. I would say it's big.
That's amazing.
There was and then there was a fella, a lovely fella who gave me a lift in
was this all happening in the after, like, you know, before 2 o'clock you said it was a deadline at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Did you go past that deadline and still have help?
I basically crossed off over. Me missus, I have to say, me missus had some self-belief in me. Yeah. She's like, you're going to do this. And our boss was going, listen, this is going to happen. I know the spirit is in there and bleeding this, that and the other. And I was like, when you start really believing something, like me missus was like, look, come out of the problem and step into the solution. Like, you'll do this. So I got a lift in that night. I got myself dressed. I was trying to hum a little bit. Like, I couldn't even hum that morning. Mm. I literally got up that Saturday morning. I couldn't go, I couldn't do that.
Wow.
I had nothing. It was just air coming out of my nose. A guy that has a chauffeur company very kindly offered to give me a lift in that Saturday night, and I felt terrible because he was a really nice fella and he wanted to have a chat with me. I couldn't even talk to him.
I
rang him a couple of weeks ago and I says, look, we'll meet up. I says, I'm going to get you a bit of lunch. I says, and we'll have a chat. I says, I really love what you're about. And he's not only a chauffeur, he's a really talented photographer as well and just has a great knowledge of Dublin, all about the docks. And just a real interesting man. His family are all kind of from around East Wall and stuff like that. So they were all dockers, like, you know. But I went into Liberty Hall and I went into the dressing room and I was still doubting myself a little bit. I was going, and I just went, you know what, I'm going to have to do this. I'm gonna pull this out of the bag. And I went up on stage when I got introduced. Joe went on and they called me name and I got up and I got through the gig. I don't know how I got through it.
Were you self-conscious, Will? Were you like at the start of it, were you going, right, I'm not going to roar, I'm just going to...
No, I wasn't, but you know what? I obviously explained to the audience because I couldn't go on and go
Mickey Mouse.
I had to make them aware of it. I says, listen, I said, I'm suffering with a really bad throat infection. I says, but, and then I kind of played, I couldn't let yous down here this evening.
Oh, yes.
Get them on side.
Love it.
I said, so no matter what happens here tonight, I'm going to get through this gig with yous and me, so we're going to do this. And they were like, right.
Amazing.
And I got through it.
That's the X Factor route. You know,
I really, really did. You know what? I got off the stage that night and I was like, the pressure.
Lifted
the relief.
Off his shoulder. Yeah.
I was like, and Jamie out of MCD went, do you know what, man? He says,
you're capable of anything.
He says, I take my hat off to you. He says, you threw everything at it. And I did. I didn't, I got through. But I haven't been great since, and now I'm seeing a voice coach and I'm trying to kind of alternative route before I go and do something else about it. I spoke to Neil Delamere the other day, who suffered with certain similar kind of things, and he went and seen someone private in the matter and seeing someone else. So that's step two. But I'm gone with this woman for the time being, and I mean, it's good at the minute. It's 100 times better than it was that Saturday night in Liberty Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not right.
It sounds like you're speaking from your throat, so you're going to have to probably learn to speak from the diaphragm.
With the diaphragm.
You know, I did a bit of singing training, as you might remember. I was a choir teacher in the Gaelscoil.
Brag.
Yeah, and I taught Mia.
Mia's a beautiful singer.
Such a good singer. Oh my God, she had me in tears one day. I'd say in the red third class.
What she hit you with?
Oh my God, supportive Northside dad.
Dad's friends.
Supportive.
Come here. Aidan McQueen is with us. Aidan McQueen is in the podcast. What a great name that is, Aidan McQueen.
It is a great name, isn't it? Such a rhymy little name.
It's a showbiz name.
Aidan McQueen.
Aidan, you're from the Marble City.
That's right, yeah. I'm from Kilkenny. Nice reference, the
Just
Marble
blew
City.
In from the Marble City. Marble City is mighty pretty.
Like the epicenter of Irish comedy to an extent, because that's where the cat laughs.
100%,
is,
yeah. Know? That's why I got into comedy.
Was
it's
it?
The only reason why I got into comedy.
Because she liked cats.
The cats. Oh. And I liked laughing and I thought, what am I going to do? Put them together.
One of my favourite things.
Yeah.
What part of Kilkenny?
So a place called Bennett's Bridge outside the city, but I'm from a small farm, like 6 acres.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Two, what did he say? Two too small for a garden or too big for something like that?
Yeah, yeah, it's too big for a garden. We had a few bullocks on it, you know, right. Like castrated cows.
Right.
Yeah. That you then eat for meat.
A few lads where I live that we acting the bullocks.
Yeah.
And there's a podcast called Talking
Bullocks. So you got into comedy because of the Cat Laughs. That's amazing. I didn't actually know that.
So when Cat Laughs started in 1995, and me and my sister Aoife and my sister Maeve, Aoife used to work in the Inter on the Door. And Maeve did a bit of comedy as well. We would volunteer for this.
Deadly.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
We got to see the best of comedians when we were 13, 14, 15. And you could do anything then. You didn't have to not be in a pub when you were 13. You know, licensing laws. Yeah. Just a wink and a nudge. We used to put out chairs. And then you'd get mad jobs. Like Dom Herrera was always drunk on the third night. And some panicked PR woman would say, can you get Dom Herrera somewhere? He's in some pub. Just fucking get him now. Sorry for saying fuck. Just get him.
Okay.
That's her, not me. Do you know?
Oh, yeah, we were kids.
And then you'd have like Dom Herrera would be so drunk and he'd ask you out, he'd, would you like to go for dinner with me? I'm 13, but thank you very much, sir.
Oh, I'm going out with Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, I'm taken. Like, it'd be weird to be like, Arda O'Hanlon needs an apple, and then you give him an apple and he'd be like, oh no, it's grand. You know, the comedians weren't demanding. Yeah.
The venue managers
were absolutely neurotic. And the comedians would come in and they were just light and breezy.
And was Mick there all that? Do you remember Mick was from 95?
Mick was there. Who else would have been there?
With a full head of hair.
With a full head of hair, yeah.
Obviously, Richard Cook would have been there a lot.
Richard Cook was there. Paulie McGlynn used to be hanging around. Yeah. We wouldn't kind of see them up in the ivory tower.
So what would be a most memorable gig from being a teenager and standing in a room watching comedy? Who comes to mind?
Let me see. I love David O'Doherty. I thought he was so cool. Dylan Moran. I thought it was all an act. And when I was about, I remember I was 17, so it wasn't quite legal to be going to nightclubs.
Right.
And what the old 90s trick of, like, you go out, you're dressed like something out of The Handmaid's Tale, just head to toe, bye mommy, I'm just going to the cinema, and then you have your bag full of, like,
just got a prayer group,
basically what you would wear if you were to solicit, right?
but when you're
17, you know, 16, 17, you think that's a normal thing to wear. I'm sure you've had those problems with your daughters and you'd put on all that shit. So I remember being at the door, my sister was working the door, it was my night off, and I said, oh, I have my shoes in the bag, and then Dylan Moran turns and he goes, what time is the shoe over at? I mean, the show.
Hey.
And I just went,
wow,
it's Dylan Moran.
And he did my own private joke.
Yeah. And he was as drunk
as
he, you know, he was there with the wine. Dylan's, he was following drunk. Barley Murphy. And he just kind of, he floated off like a kind of a newly born foal.
Yeah.
It was incredible to see. I thought it was an act. It's not an act.
Phil Kay
as well. He had a house party, and we all came. He was an absolute mad bastard. I was working at Kilkenny Castle as a tour guide, and he said, "I'm going to come tomorrow and raid the castle." And I said, "Oh, you're hilarious."
I seen Phil have one of the
most
spectacular dying of a comedian I've ever seen. He was doing a 1 hour show, me, Willa and Bernard O'Shea.
It was that bad. Two undertakers from Kilkenny were standing at the back of the room waiting on him.
But you know Phil, he's mad, he goes, shoots from the hip, he had an idea in his head, he was going to experiment and all that. Full house, I was a Kilkenny
packed.
Arms Hotel, I don't know,
it was the back of Zuni's there.
Zuni's, yeah, that hotel next to it.
Yeah.
And we were in this room and he was doing it, and then like there's nothing happening, there's no sound, no laughter, and then after about half an hour people start getting twitchy and one or two got up, but he ran down the back to prevent them from getting out.
One of the best heckles I ever heard in my life.
And here it comes, right? So out of nowhere, like, this is gone. He says, I promise you it's going to get better. And we've seen Phil Kay before and he's been brilliant.
Yeah.
But this show wasn't happening. And we were all there like, geez, this is so awkward. I hate seeing a fellow comedian die, especially in front of you. Like, you're like, oh no. Like, if I'm at a comedy club and somebody's dying, I run, I go somewhere else, don't watch it.
It's cringe.
Where I imagine sitting there and being forced to sit, because we knew if he tried to get up, he'd try and block us.
Yeah.
And then there was a silence for about 5 seconds and someone said,
and then out of nowhere, this bloke at the back of the room just went, we don't know what a truck or mortgage is. It was just
the
like
whole
it was
room.
Just like a pressure valve being lifted. Wow.
It was the best joke of the night.
Yeah, and
that
everyone,
was it.
It was so random. Everyone just lost their shit laughing. And they were all turning around to man, yeah, we should give you the €20. Yeah, man, shy.
Yeah, I don't think Kilkenny would be able to handle all that whimsical, crazy stuff. Their Kilkenny audience, they're fairly mainstream. Like, and they and you know, you have these owl lads in Kilkenny that were like, oh, I don't know about that now. Dylan Moran's losing his edge. They're real experts on comedy. Like Dom O'Reara, he's lost it there the last few years. He's been using the same material now, and he's relying on old hack jokes. Like, they use this terminology, like they're talking about hurling. Yeah. And so Kilkenny people are spoiled. They've seen a lot of stuff. So I saw all that brilliant comedy when I was younger. So it was always in the back of my head, I'd like to do it.
But you started out with, as a duo, didn't you?
Yeah, I did with Andrea.
That's the first time I remember seeing you. I remember, I don't know, I was a kid way down the country somewhere, and I remember seeing you and Andrea going, oh wow,
who is Love a Biscuit,
a duo. Singing songs, singing comedy songs. But and like, what was, like, obviously still in touch with Andrea?
Yeah, she's down in Cork, she's working for RTE. She's doing very well, lovely fella, lovely house. It's all
and it just came to a point where you just went, you know, we'll go our separate ways, but we stay friends.
No, I don't think we ever officially finished it, because we still every time we get together we're like, yeah, we must write another song 10 years later. Like, we never ended it. I think I went to England and we started individually. We met at like our second gig and we just became best friends and we started doing stuff together. But it was never like a formal, like, goodbye.
End of contract.
No, we still kind of go, let's get the band back together,
Did she not think, like, kind of when you were doing gigs on your own, maybe I'm not in this gang anymore?
Well, she was doing gigs on her own as well.
Oh, was she? Sorry.
Yeah, no, she was good.
So it was like a mutual kind of agreement.
It was organic.
Not agreed.
No, we had the duo going on, Accident and Emergency, and then we just called it that so we could be at the top of the listings for Edinburgh.
Oh.
And then I was doing my thing, she was doing it. But you know, you're in a duo, right?
Yeah.
You go to the Ha'penny, you headline the Ha'penny, you end up with 30 quid each.
If you're lucky.
I always think of that, and I mean, like, you think of anyone like that, like a thing of ants, what are they called over in England?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Three lads. I mean, it's a three-way split. Like,
I mean, but they're doing brilliant now. I remember seeing them headline the Ha'penny and getting 15 quid each. Can you imagine?
I'm sure they had to taxi each home.
Yeah,
I know. And they just looked and they counted it all out. You know, they were all living with their mammies at the time. And look at them now. But look at you now, Willa. I remember about 10 years ago, maybe a bit more, maybe 13 years ago, when I was teaching Mia.
Yeah.
And you were going over and back on building sites to England.
You were
struggling, like.
Yeah, come here, look
at how good things have come.
But you know what? A lot of it has kind of come. Look, I done the podcast with the lads, with the two lads from Talking Bollocks, no bother naming them. They're two really good lads. And some of the clips and some of the stories, and people are always saying to me, is that a true story? And I'm like, that is a true story, like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's genuinely a true story. Like, stuff that anything that I said on it was true. Like.
But I think that's what people relate to. So because it's true and they can identify with it and they hear the voice, they hear the accent and they're like, oh, he's speaking my language. He's telling me stories that I've experienced and people are latching onto it. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And the clip that we don't hear about the bloke saying about the Concorde.
That's still getting likes today.
But a fella sending me stuff sending me things on Instagram going, my mate used to go that we were going to the Bionic Gardens.
I've seen another comment.
Yeah, and another fella was choking and your man goes, the Heineken manoeuvre.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant, like, you know.
And someone inhaled a taxi.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Like, come here, no, it does, but I mean, it's like everything. I think you've got to grind and you've got to go and you say to yourself, is things ever kind of going to get better? And I mean, at the moment, things are getting better. Like,
it's great. And you've got other responsibilities now. You've got if you lose your voice for a show, that's not just, oh, I can't headline the Laughter Lounge. That is everybody in MCD is relying on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so
no wonder you were getting. Yeah, it's not only that. It's like, it's the people that are making me, the punters that are buying the tickets.
You taught.
I taught
in
Willa's
the Gael
kids.
School in
in the Gael School.
In Coolock, much posher.
Come on.
Christy Dignam's sister was the secretary.
Jackie.
Oh, that's a crazy word, isn't it?
She was a great secretary because she took no nonsense.
No shit whatsoever.
No shit. And the funny thing about it, she was fluent in Irish because she was there for so long, but she never spoke it, but she could write it perfectly, better spelling than most teachers. She's very bright and she understood it all, but she hated hated speaking it. But sometimes she would go up to that. She'd have to do it. She'd be like, did it. So anyway, just letting you know, there's a lot, law, half day, whatever, boy. Like, it was just, yeah, she couldn't. Yeah. But then she'd go to all the stuff. She knew it perfectly, but she just had this thing where she wouldn't want to speak. It was so funny.
So you are a Gaeilgeor.
I'm a massive Gaeilgeor, yeah.
And I've seen you do gigs. I've seen clips of you doing gigs,
yeah,
in Irish.
Yeah, I do.
What's that like?
Oh, it's, well, I'm used to it. You see, yeah, my dad was an Irish teacher, so he only spoke Irish to me when I was growing up.
Oh, right.
I know.
Right.
It was weird in Kilkenny. It would be like Willis speaking Latin to his kids or something, or it would be like you speaking like in a fake American accent to your children.
I did it all the time.
Why was it kind of weird in Kilkenny?
There's
was
no
it, was
it
really
up there.
I was just going to say,
yeah,
that, yeah.
No, he just is one of these people. He does his, he dances to his own beat, and I was born and he was like, Conestatotu. My mother, yeah, was just, yeah, like, right, this will last about a week. Who's going to be speaking Irish to a baby? Weird. But he kept going, he kept going, he kept going. And me and my three sisters, we only speak Irish with them.
Wow.
Which I hated, amazing, when I was a teenager. I was so embarrassed.
Yeah, you know, now it's kind of cool.
That's
now
incredible.
Now it's cool. Now
it's,
I make so
and
much
is the language
money out of
taking
it as well.
Is the language taking a tone now at the minute? Do you reckon was there some speech or something done the other day in Irish, or did something happen in the Dáil or something like that?
Ivan Yates, sure, said was that it was Ivan kind Yates? Of a dead language on TV, and that Brian guy, like, high-fived him, Dowling, yeah, and everyone was complaining. Like, I don't care. He was joking. Ivan Yates can say what he wants. I, yeah, don't care. He's not like this cool, he's not like Kim Kardashian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I've seen, it's amazing when you see foreign people learning Irish. Like, I've seen TikToks of, I think it's a Korean guy. He's from South Korea. And he speaks fluent Irish.
Yeah.
And he
it's
has
like
the manners.
Speaking fluent Chinese.
And Irish.
And Irish,
yeah. Yeah, when he did
amazing.
That in the Name of the Father show. Mm,
what a great name for a show.
I know, it's such a good name.
But that's, you just proved the point there, I suppose, Aideen, in terms of, you know, the way we're taught Irish in school is it's force fed down your throat. Kids repel. Whereas you were immersed in it. You were immersed in it. Your, yeah, dad was speaking to you as a kid, and it just became second nature to you.
Exactly.
And Des has always said from that show, that was the way to learn Irish, immerse yourself in it, go down. And when you've no alternative but to speak it, you will speak
you
it.
Will
but
speak
you know
it,
what,
yeah,
as well?
The kids in the Gaelic school were great. Remember, yeah, you didn't have any. You
No. And this is what I'm just about to say, right? I think when you're at your own pace to learn something and you're not being put under pressure, yeah, to learn it, which I was in school, my Irish teacher, she was a lovely woman, Miss Golden, if she's listening. But Miss Golden, yes. Yeah, so she taught Irish, right? Fiery red-headed woman, really nice woman.
She's a gold retriever.
So she taught Irish. So the Irish and maths, I really, really struggled with in school. It's crazy because I was only actually thinking today about that. I used to do my homework before I went into school in the morning. I used to get someone's copy.
Oh yeah,
and copy down, yeah, the thing and. But my maths teacher, Mr. Cribbin, I'm not going to go into it. It was
Cribbin.
We.
I love your teacher's names, by the way. Cribbin and Golden.
Like, we'd corporal punishment, like, up to the bleeding 1982. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I distinctly remember getting battered around primary school. Like, it was horrible. Like,
yeah,
really was. And just talking about kids as well, and I spoke about it kind of at the show, was that, you know, the likes of ADHD and the likes of, you know, Asperger's and the likes of all these things that were not diagnosed in the 80s, where you had a room full of kids that was called a special class, all just sitting down the back, all like...
Ignored.
Basically, yeah.
As long as they were quiet, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're considered, if you had any of those ailments, you were considered a troubled child, a troublemaker.
Special. You were considered special. You're sitting there and eating a box of crayons. Like, you know what I mean?
Spare some of them crayons.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like,
the red ones are lovely.
Yeah, my sister used to eat crayons all the time. But she
wasn't pregnant now, was she?
No, she was. She was seven. But so unless there was some kind of a miracle there, but my mother would be like, no, her shit is
she
blue.
Used,
yeah.
She is blue.
She used to cry out.
Yeah. And she was special because she couldn't hear until she was she was six. She was deaf and she just couldn't talk. But my mother was, she had a kid in 83, a kid in 84, a kid in 85. She sent my sister to school when she was three.
Did your dad play Irish on her?
Yeah.
Well, that's probably why she didn't speak for 6 years. Like, what are you fucking talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about? I don't like this. Yeah. That's what they do in the Gaelscoil and Coolock when they go into Nina and Bioga baby infants. And you can't, you have to speak a bit of English, but you mostly have to do it in Irish. So again, you have to be real animated. Like, Conestatotu. Oscar on Lauer. Oscar and Lara, and they're like, Muta, I don't know what you're saying. And they're screaming at
you. Muta,
who's the little girl who want to go home?
And it sounds like they're saying Munter, like you're an ugly person. Munter. Then they scream at you on the street. Like if you're a teacher and the kids see you outside school, it's like they see Telly Swift or something. Yeah. Munter, Munter, Munter. Yeah. Like, oh my God. And then Connick made two, because we took smoke all. You know, they're always ratting you out. Smoke all.
It's mad because my kids went to Gael school, both my daughters, and I haven't got an iota about Irish.
Have you even got even very basic Irish?
No.
No?
No, I've nothing. But I can say a couple of things. Sweets, Kenny Milchon.
Well, there you go.
I can ask for sweets and ask to go to the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. You see, that's probably the go-to.
If I'm in a hostage
anybody.
Situation with a paedophile, they're two things that do. If he's Irish,
I will try to go and go to the toilet.
Sweets and I'll go to the toilet. More bleeding sweets.
So you've done Irish gigs, and are the Irish gigs popular? Right in, obviously they must be.
They're popular enough. Like there's a group of people in Dublin, and it's expanding all the time. And they will go. You have to push them now. So if I'm organising an Irish gig, I push. I go in all the, like there was one in Dunleary, and I went into every single South Dublin mummy yummy mummy group, like Gigasquelga, you know, South Dublin yummy mummies yoga, you know, all of this. So you have to push, but you will sell out maybe 40-50, but you push it a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
People like to support it. It's interesting but different. So I probably do about 20 a year, and some of them are very well paid. You know, the corporates for the Uther Os na Gaeltachta.
Brilliant.
Always available for those guys.
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, R-A-D. It's not bad. Yeah,
and you're looking for a support.
Support act. I'll get Mitch Canning, Milch on. Yeah.
Willie Bond.
Willie Bond.
All that material.
Yeah, Liam.
No, it's Liam DeFuita. His Annam Ditch.
Liam DeFuita, yeah.
His Annam Ditch.
His Annam Dumb.
No, I'm saying Willie Bond because Willie White.
It's not Willie Bond. Liam DeFuita. DeFuita is my second name.
No, I can't get Willie Bond.
Liam Bond. Liam DeFuita.
The name's Bond.
Yeah, Liam Bond. 007.5.
And Willow, you were at my first gig as well. You hosted my first gig.
I was.
I must have told you the story. In the Halfpenny.
Wow.
So I was Eleanor Tiernan, I became friends
you
with
you were hosting the Halfpenny.
I was hosting the gig. I was looking, I was gone.
Yeah, so I was so nervous. Eleanor Tiernan pushed me to do comedy. Fair play to her. She's like, just here's this number of this man. Just do this gig.
Yeah.
And Ring the man. And I had 6 weeks to prepare, and I didn't really know what I was going to say. And I got so dressed up, like I had like the hair was up to here. I could have ceiling fan could have taken it off. I had a padded bra. I was out to here. Could more material in my bra than in my jokes. Like I just thought if I got dressed up, everything would fall into place. And I swear I was in this toilet, like on my knees doing Hail Marys. I was so nervous. I came like about an hour and a half early, and then you saunter on and you're like, ah, Muntar. And I was like,
oh, sorry, you knew.
Oh my God. And
she's,
you go,
like,
oh,
you're
here for the comedy. And I said, actually, Willa, I am the comedy.
Oh.
And it was just, and I blacked out. Like, I wasn't drinking or anything at the time, but I blacked out because I was so nervous. I didn't know what I was saying. I remember getting enough laughs that it wasn't terrible. But I remember I always wanted to gig with you again to like just improve, to prove that I've gotten better with it. And I've got
it. Come here, and in saying that, you have got better.
But you're still in the
year.
But I'm going to tell you something, because like when we started, we weren't great, right? And it's like a lot. But there's not a lot of people that you actually see coming in fresh, and you sit back and go,
wow,
Jesus Christ, like, you know, like they're brilliant.
You can see
potential. Very, very seldom. But I'm saying, I mean, you look at some of the greats, like, everyone starts on a rocky road.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's the grind. I mean, there's Joanne McNally, another female comedian, started off, she wasn't great, but I'll tell you one thing, she had ambition and she had drive and she stuck her heels in and she had material.
I would just like to say that it was me and PJ Gallagher who pushed Joanne McNally out onto the stage to do our first ever gig in the Hawkesville Theatre in Sligo. We had done a play together called Singlehood. And
which was a great play, I've seen it.
And Joanne was in the play, and PJ was in the play, and we were talking to Joanne. She was just funny.
She's very funny. Yeah.
Off, you know, whatever. And we were going, you should do stand up. She's like, oh my God, I don't think so. And we're going, you're definitely doing it. She says, oh my God, I don't think so. So we brought her to Sligo one night because I was touring with PJ at the time, and she said, just come and see the show, see behind the scenes and all that. And then when we got to the Hawkesville, full house PJ show, you know. And I had done my 15, 20 minutes, and then I went out and I said, sorry, just we're just going to have another guest on now. And Joanne's at the side going, what?
No
She just
way.
Pushes her out, she just grabs the mic and goes,
oh my God.
And she spoke for about 5 minutes, but she didn't die. And she got a few laughs.
Good for her.
And she came off stage going, that wasn't so bad at all.
Yeah.
But how evil, that's the equivalent of pushing your toddler into the sea.
We were threatening her to do it. I don't think she quite believed that we were going to do it. But I think she was secretly happy.
I don't think
well.
Anyone would believe that you'd do that. That's people's nightmare.
But she did it. And now me and PJ look back and go, wow, we created a monster. She's the biggest thing in Irish comedy.
I think that's the most lucrative nightmare she ever had.
I know, that's true. That'd be like pushing me into the honours maths class or something. That'd be just torture.
Like pushing me into basic maths class.
Or pushing you into the Alguelga.
So tell me then, the Irish gigs are going great. Come here, how long are you doing it now?
12 years.
Wow. Do you think have you found your voice? Because they say after 10 years you found your voice.
I think at 10 years I did find my voice. Yeah.
And it's mad you should say 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's mad you should say that, because I remember I was telling you about the gig I done in Ficker Street with Dara O'Brien that time that Jess brought me on.
Yeah.
And Dara O'Brien says, you'll be 10 years at this before you really find your niche and get good at it.
Yeah.
And I was like, go away with that. But it is. It's a long road.
A
lot of people only stay in the car for 2 or 3 years and they just jump out.
And do you know what?
They get disheartened and then they just go.
Women.
But I mean, if you're in the car for 2.5, 3 years, you want to get out, wouldn't you? Where are you fucking going? Like, if you're not there yet.
I didn't even think about it. This is the worst analogy ever.
No, it is though. You've got to have something that just, you know,
you have
makes
to
you just
mad.
Go and go and go. Like.
But I've seen you, Aidan. I saw you recently at Rascals Brewery there recently. And you're very, very comfortable in your own skin. And
Now, I just, interesting to you say that, because I was uncomfortable at that gig. But I've been doing it. It wasn't going great. I just couldn't get into them.
You did well.
I couldn't get them to really. It was fine, but I'm at the stage now.
In your defence, though,
we're at the stage now that
I can still not fake it.
You don't panic anymore.
No, I
like
know
that.
This should go well. I'll just do it. Yeah. And I can kind of go. It's like when you're in a car and you put it on cruise control.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, you can kind of just do it.
Autopilot, It's that's what I was going to say, Aidan.
Same with you, Shirley. Like, you could
the
just
experience
do
you
like
have
that.
Now is that you don't panic if things aren't going well. But you see, I didn't even know. Like, I was looking at you there that night, and to give some context to the gig, it was the very first night of that comedy club.
Yeah.
So it was, to all intents and purposes, a new audience, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Were there freebies given out on the night? You know, to fill it on the first night, where the people who are not used to comedy, all that was kind of coming into play. But I thought you handled it really well, and it's a testament to your experience and your confidence and your ability to turn a cold room into a warm room. You did that.
Thank you. I hadn't seen what happened before, and I found it hard. But it's just like, I had a brilliant gig before. I ran up to this one. It was all right. They can't all be beauts, can they?
Yeah. Look,
like my mother used to say about her daughters.
And there's a craft in that itself, looking that you're not panicking when inside you really are, right?
Yeah.
So it's like trying to fix a pipe underneath the sink, and you're looking for everything that's in the bag to get this thing right. But you're just doing it with a bit of audacity, and you're going, do you know what? Yeah, the water's flowing out all over the place, but it's grand. We'll get it sorted.
Yeah. Because
I think that people, they read your body language, start to panic and you start doing this, they start doing it with you.
100%.
So there is an art and a craft in itself of when you're going. Because sometimes you're going, Jesus, I've done that same set last night and people were falling around the place. And then the next night you do it and it's not getting what it should get. And it's never you. Do you know what I mean? It's never me or it's never you. The material is good and it's wordy. Just some nights the people ain't buying what you're selling. And it's okay. But I love that comedians like yourself and a lot of others, when it's not going well, can just bleed and
Just keep
the room nice and cool.
Yeah,
like, you can
still get the laughs. That's the thing. You get some comedians that kind of get skyrocketed really early for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But they don't. But then when they have a bad gig, they don't have anything to fall back on.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just talk to the audience or stuff. Yeah. So it's really hard for them. Or at least I know I haven't been skyrocketed anyway. It's been stepping up a mountain with a boulder on it, pushing.
But that's what you've gotten very good at, Aidan, the interaction with the crowd. That's a great tool to have as a comedian, isn't it?
It is.
The whole ability to talk to the audience.
Yeah.
That is, like, do you MC any gigs?
I haven't. No, I used to only MC, and then when I tried to do material, it was like
you MC the gig I did last year in Galway, the Roasting Dove.
That's right.
That's right. And
yeah.
You were excellent.
So I you were brilliant at that gag. Absolutely took the roof off it. And I was, yeah. But then when you're emceeing, you're like, yeah, let's have the crack. Oh, just chatting away, chatting away. And then you try to do a bit of material and you sound like you're doing like a poetry competition in the 90s.
Yeah,
you
know,
hello, my name is Edie.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a flower poem.
Yeah.
So you have to, yeah, you have to get that balance between.
Well, there's not a lot that can MC.
No.
Because people that tell you that they can MC, they can't. You know, it's and it's like what we talked about. It's an art in itself. It's being able to stand there and dig for something until you actually hit the gold in the crowd.
Didn't someone
gives
us,
you
really,
something, you know?
Who was it told us when we were starting out that on a club night, the most important job of the night is the headliner and the MC?
Yeah.
I can't remember. Might be Jason,
the MC just sets her up.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you get fellas going up and they're told, look, I do 15 at the top. I'm telling you for something for me. If I'm 6 in or 7 in and someone gives me a big laugh and a round of applause, I'm bringing on the first act. Because it's a selfless act.
Yeah.
All you're doing is you're racking up the balls for someone to come out of the queue and break and start potting them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there is some great MCs out there.
Oh, brilliant.
Carl Spain, great MC.
We were talking about Dublin comedians and, you know, like the lack of, I suppose, working class Dublin comedians out there, but they're starting to come through the floor now, like Pads on Muddy, Joe Dowland.
Garry Murren's is a smashing class, great MC, brilliant. And it's hard to do. It's hard to get good MCs.
Yeah, it really is. So I'm just saying, you know, put on your resume, Aideen, that you're available to MC as well,
yes,
as do sets.
Public speaking.
MC and Irish language MC. There you go. And Irish grinds.
Yes.
would you have the same trouble in the Gaeltacht looking for people to come to the gigs? Because I heard recently as well, something that I didn't know, that Al Porter does gigs in Irish as well.
He does, yeah. And he's
never knew
fantastic.
That.
Is
yeah,
he good?
He went
yeah?
to Gaelscoil. Yeah, he's excellent. Like he has a few, like a stock the tree. He's great.
Oh, yeah,
jokes.
Yeah.
He does, you know, he really put a lot of work into it. He was reading off his stuff. He did fantastic. We did it in Galway Comedy Festival.
There's a fella from this parish, actually used to work in this parish, in the Joe Parish,
Hugh Carr.
Joe Parish.
Hugh Carr. I know Hugh.
You know Hugh. He's a Gaelgar. And he does comedy in
Gaelgar.
He does comedy in Irish.
He does comedy in Gaelgar. I just agreed with you. Yeah. He does in a Gaelgar, in an Irish speaker. He does it inside, like a babushka, like a Russian doll. Yeah. No, yeah, he's a good lad. He's good crack and he does
Hector
Irish.
Hector would be a great MC.
Hector did MC our show in
did
Galway.
He
was fantastic, yeah.
He's a very, very funny fella, Hector.
It was me, Eddie Malarkey, Al Porter and Hector.
Eddie does it as well,
yeah. Yeah, I trained Eddie up now.
Even Aidan McQueen does it. Let's do it. Let's talk Oscar.
These are the TG Catter show waiting to happen.
I'm not serious.
They have no interest in doing Irish language comedy in TG Catter.
Why not?
I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
It's all like.
I'm sure they go, yeah, because you audition for Ross in a Room.
Oh my God, all the time. Yeah, yeah. I'm a terrible actor. I can't act. They got me to audition for this woman in a wheelchair, the new doctor. She's going to be in a wheelchair, very woke. And they said, now see Cecilia Conn, just sit in the chair and do the lines. And I'm just so kind of active, I kept kind of like
jumping
across your legs and
that. Crossing the legs.
Yeah.
Hi.
So why are you in that wheelchair?
So what happened? You got paralysed in the waist down.
Yeah.
Happened about 6 months ago.
You can't feel your legs at all.
Let me tell you what happened there. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Scratching your foot now.
Is this on? Yeah, so I did. They were not impressed by me. But I think they also do stuff like you'll be 22 and they'll ask you to do audition for the 50-year-old.
Yeah.
Like postman or something. They don't care. Every so often they do
once
this thing.
Once you speak Irish.
Yeah, once you speak Irish. Yeah.
It's gas the way you say you can't act. They kind of bleed and rest them so
no.
You fit in. Like.
Some of them are terrible.
What are you pointing at me for?
I'm talking about TG Cal.
All right.
Yeah.
Like the rest of them can even get soaps.
No, on TG Carr. They show great films.
They show great films.
Don't they?
Yeah,
the show Stompers, like Goodfellas was on the other week.
Yeah, if it wasn't for TG Carr, I would have never seen Naked People. Because they was constantly, when we were younger, Paulina, they'd all these French films like da-da-da-da-da, and then suddenly there'd be no clothes on. Yeah, Paulina La Plage. Friday night, TG Carr in the 90s. What did you say?
Is that about a French bloke with a stammer?
Pauline à la plage. Pauline at the beach. Do you not have any French either, Willa?
Le French stick.
Je parle un peu français.
Le France.
Très bien. Accent très bon. Very good accent. It's a great place,
Paris
isn't it?
Is an amazing city.
You did your show over there.
So we went and done a play in Paris in a place called Montmartre. And it was a beautiful, it was called
The Examination.
Théâtre de la Ville Theatre Festival. So we were there for a week and it was subtitled, the play, the whole play. So when we were talking, there was a woman in a booth and she was typing. Amazing. And it was coming up on the screen. And for the 4 nights we done, it was sold out every night and the French loved it. And I'm thinking, I'm in a theatre down in Mullingar and I'm in that lounge of 60 or 70 people. And these French people who don't speak English and don't, you know the Dublin accent or anything like that, came out and watched this play. An amazing 400 seat theatre packed to the rafters every night and they loved it.
I wonder the woman who was doing the translation, was she like, what is he bleeding?
And she was so French. She was like, she was probably in her early 50s and she used to turn up in her Lambretta. And you know, the French are just
stylish.
They're so stylish.
Yeah,
they are. All of them smoke. Even the kids too.
I know.
Very smoke.
They all smoke.
Yeah, they smoke.
And I just couldn't get over how...
cultured.
No, every night, like you what? Now, it was the summer when we were there. It was June and it was a week of bliss weather. Like, it was unbelievable. And every night people are sitting on the streets and they're eating and it's just, you know, you're in shorts and a T-shirt and... It was an amazing week. I'll never forget it. And then we went to, we brought the show to Belgium. And it was dog rough. I actually, been from Ballymun, I brought my daughter, Ava with me, and Linda brought her daughter, Taylor. And it was rough, like I was holding
Where'd
the kids
go, Brussels?
Beside me. Brussels, yeah.
Oh, which parts of Brussels now?
It was a place called, what was it called?
I've been to Brussels and I enjoyed it.
It was lovely. But I suppose we were just in a nice part.
Oh, Liège, yeah.
Yeah.
Stand on Liège.
It was dog rough.
Yeah.
This is coming from...
Like, we were out on Liège. No, it was rough out.
What would, like, because I always think French people are French speakers are supposed so posh. Like, what's a French knacker like?
Yeah.
I'm talking about Belgium. Liège. It was.
But they speak French there.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
They might speak Belgian. Half of them speak French and half of them speak Belgian, which is Flemish. That's the one.
And it was just really, really uneasy, like the place was, and I just didn't feel safe in the city.
Was the venue full?
Yes, we done 3 nights there. I'd say one night was full and the other was probably about 80%.
Brilliant.
And then we went to another place called Trysil.
Trysil?
Yeah, in Norway, right? And so my bag got lost when I got over there. With no bag, all my clothes was gone. Oh, man, I wrecked everyone's head.
Was there the gorilla costume left?
No, it was just my clothes, right? So here, and we were in a place called Trysil, but it's bright 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
It was mental. Like 4 o'clock in the morning, you're walking around, you're still. I didn't even really feel tired because it was bright. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was crazy. Well, what an amazing city. So it's bright 24 hours during the summer, but then the winter, it's like the
black
minimal sunlight.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. That would be so hard. And then you lost all your clothes and so expensive there.
So I had to go and buy.
That would be a million Norwegian krona, please, for one pair of trackers.
Very,
very expensive. Yeah. It was. I got a quarter pound of chips and a can of Coke, and it was like €32.
Wow.
My God.
Yeah.
They must think we're like a third world country. You're in underpants.
No, do you know what? Look, I went into a clothes shop and I bought the basics. Like, I bought a couple of pairs of jeans. I had to buy under. I didn't get my bag back for probably about 4 or 5 weeks after. Look, I'd nothing.
Really, can I just say that was an amazing play? The Examination.
Did you see that?
I saw it
in Ballymun.
Oh,
yeah, it's
just incredible. We're going to Berlin.
Documentary theatre, isn't it?
We're going to Berlin.
You're going to Berlin? Excuse me.
I've never been to Berlin.
You're such
you ever been to Berlin?
You are a massive hipster. I have. Of course I've been to. Look at this hat. I'm a 100% dickhead. I've been to Berlin a few times.
Have you? Is it a good city?
It's a great city.
An amazing city.
It's huge. Get the bus tour first to kind of get to know it. And you
see
the old
wall and all that.
Yeah. The east versus the west. The old kind of communist place.
Checkpoint and Charlie and all that kind of thing. And
it's very interesting.
Brilliant.
They all have great English.
Where you cocaine?
Yeah. Checkpoint Charlie. Check that and point out where it is.
Check that and point out where you got it, will you?
So they check if you have cocaine, and if you don't have it, you have to fuck off back to France. That's what they do. Checkpoint Charlie. But it's very cool. It's nice. And when I went about 10 years ago, and it was the last time, wasn't that expensive? It was still, like the hostel was only 15 euro a night or something. Right. But now you're touring artists.
No, we're
going to
be staying in a hotel.
Place. Yeah,
a hotel. I mean, Broken Talkers, They do it right, and they get great funding from the Arts Council. And I went and seen a play. I would highly recommend for anybody that's listening to this, if it's out before it is, but tomorrow night, the play is called Bellow, B-E-L-L-O-W. And it's about an accordion player from Kerry who was a kid when he started playing the accordion. His whole childhood was non-existent. He was like the Tiger Woods of accordion playing. Came from Ballybunion. He was designed to play the accordion because one hand is bigger than the other, where you do the pushing and the squeezing, and the fingers are small on the other side. Honestly,
sure God,
you need to see this play.
I was born.
It was I watched this and he's playing in it. And so his great-great-grandfather played in the Waldorf Astoria as an accordion player. All his whole family, generations down.
So is it a biography of his life, is it, Will?
He went to Kilkenny for the under-16 All-Ireland Accordion Playing Championships. When you hear this, this is a true story. He went on his own, hitchhiked, left his mother and father, put his thumb out, got to Kilkenny.
Small thumb.
all the other kids was there with the family. So when they were getting called up, everyone was clapping for them and all that. And then he got called up. He went up on the stage to the sound of his own footsteps. And he tore the roof off the place. Yeah. And he won the under-16s. And when they gave him the trophy, wasn't there someone's name on it already that had been inscribed into it? It was fixed. But you want to see this man.
It's good. Bellow.
And it's an amazing story. And then it goes into his...
Okay, spoiler alert now for anyone who's going to see Bellow.
Yeah, no, I'm not. You need that. It's an amazing piece of theatre.
It's very... Is it one man show?
No, there's three in it. So there's the guy that's in it with me, he's in it. And then there's a girl in it, she's a dancer. Right. You'd be kind of wondering what's that about, but...
Yeah. Makes sense. It sounds
great. And are you very into the theatre now?
No, I'm not. No, I'll go and see...
How dare you, Aidan?
See bits and pieces. I was never kind of a big theatre goer or watch stuff until I done the play. Like,
yeah.
I done... plays in school, like, and I done The Borstal Boy in Mountjoy.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
And I done The Plough and the Stars.
Yeah.
I played Flute or Good in the Plough and the Stars in Mountjoy as well.
Yeah.
So I've done a bit of theatre in there, but no, I wouldn't class myself as a
theatre. But you must be interested in now and watch it in a different way. Because good theatre is amazing, but bad theatre, which a lot of it is terrible.
Yeah. I went to see stuff in Edinburgh and... Square, some of it's been really, really good. And like you says, you know, we should be called a cringe festival.
It's the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Edinburgh Cringe.
You're happy at the end because you can leave.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that sea
That's
swimming.
Why it's such a round of applause. Like, oh my God, I'm a man. Thank you so much.
Yeah. We're getting out of here.
Yeah, it's like at the end of the Mass where you say, the Lord be with you and also with you may go, thanks be to God.
Yeah.
And you're like, I feel great now. That's because everything else is awful. It's like any of these things, like the sea swimming that I was doing a lot of. Like, I'm like, oh, I feel great for the whole day. Yeah, of course you feel great because you're not freezing anymore. You're not nearly dying.
Yeah.
Like Mass, so I feel great after Mass. Yeah, Mammy, of course, because you were bored for an hour and now you're out of it.
Yeah.
It's not actually the thing that's doing it. It's the relative...
I feel spiritually fulfilled.
Yeah. Where did you go sea swimming?
I met you down there.
Port Marnock. I haven't been in a few weeks because my chest has been...
No, you better not.
I'm not getting in when the my mask on. Don't get into that sea.
We don't want the whole of Slovakia praying for you.
You get ammonia.
Every week you look up your diary, Will, and you see where your gigs are and then find out when you need to start talking less. That's basically what you got to do from here on in, you know, until we find out what your voice specialist comes up with.
Yeah.
I think next week the podcast is just going to be a silent meditation for half an hour.
Yeah,
that's a good idea. Wellness
podcast.
It'll
be an hour long game of charades between me and Willa. Sounds like two words.
You would definitely win charades.
Sounds like.
There we go, lads. Another hour and a bit has passed by.
You're joking.
You must be joking.
Come here. How long did you live in England for?
Sure, I was there for...
No, you go for it, yeah.
2.5 years, and then I went back during COVID.
So were you London?
I was London, yeah.
Where
I'm still over back all the time. I still have a place I can stay anytime I want. Yeah, so I'll go back there now tomorrow night.
Lovely.
Then I'll go just because I have to fly to Sweden.
She's got to Sweden.
I'm going to Sweden, why wouldn't I go to Sweden?
Have you been to Sweden before?
I have been to Sweden,
yes.
I love it.
I've been to a place called Halmstad.
Halmstad
in Sweden.
Oh, yeah,
it's a lovely
football team.
Really good. And where were you living in London?
I was living everywhere.
Same as me, yeah.
I lived in Mitcham, I lived in Streatham, I lived in... Then I ended up living with a very wealthy man in Belsize Park for a bit. That wasn't a good idea. I lived everywhere. Oh, yeah, the COVID videos, yeah. Yeah, I lived everywhere. And then I went over again. Yeah, I still always go over. I still have kind of... In my mind, I'm like, maybe I have to move over to London. But you know what? Comedy's good here now.
Yeah, it is.
People are booking me. I get better gigs here. I'm not really known there. I never really broke into the scene. Like I do a few corporates at Christmas and I do some, you know, Auschlag kind of gigs. And now I'm going to The Stand. I thought for years, oh, The Stand is the place to do, and I'm booked into all of them. The Mecca. Yeah. They don't give you much money.
Fine. And you know what? I used to gig The Stand. I used to do The Best of Irish. And I'm not going to run The Stand down or anything like that, but I found it difficult to get gigs now.
Yeah.
That's it. And come here, look, the guy, Tink Shepherd, that runs it, is a lovely guy, but the booking end of stuff... I'm kind of like, I felt like I was annoying them all the time for gigs. And when it gets to that stage of looking for stuff, Tommy, come here, go on really well with Tommy. Yeah, Tommy's a lovely fella.
Yeah.
But when I went to the office end of things and they're like, listen, we'll get back on to you next week. And then 3 weeks passes and you're getting back on again. And I just went to, do you know, I'm not knocking at this door anymore. Like,
yeah.
And I just stopped knocking and just done something
I know
else.
There's certain clubs, yeah, that just don't want me and you just have to give up. Like,
yeah.
Don't
take it personally.
Don't you want me?
I've got 20 minutes. Say that you won't need me. The joke's too late to find.
It just is off the bat.
You better have the crack or we will both be sorry. Don't you want the AD?
Okay, and then we wonder, oh, why does he have voice problems? Like,
it's
not like he's singing every 5 minutes. Like, his life is a musical.
As comedian in the international bar. That much is true.
He's still the only comedian in my life.
I was telling Eric, my mates that I used to take drugs with, you know.
Yeah.
We bumped into him, we gone, are you still down the comedian?
Oh, no.
I love that.
No.
I'm doing the comedy.
Doing the comedy.
Yeah.
I am a thespian. I am threading the boards now. thespian.
The lads that you used to know back then, would they now be, fair play to you, you're fantastic, they're giving you hugs and all, you're doing great.
Yeah, I do feel sometimes like I'm a doctor sometimes when I do meet them.
Yeah.
I'm only on 80 mils of methadone and I'm going, it's immaterial to me what you're on. I still have time for all my old mates and I'll stop
do.
And, you know, wherever I give them a few quid and give them a bit of my time. Like, it's addiction, you know.
I don't know if you've ever stood with this man in town anywhere, Lady.
I haven't.
I stood with Willie one day at Christmas time on Henry Street. I was doing a vox pop for Joe and then I seen Will. Will stops, we have a little chat. No, I barely said hello and he was like, all right, Eric. And then for about 15 minutes, people walking by, well, he's like, whoop, whoop, whoop,
like the mayor.
I'd love to be the Lord Mayor of Dublin.
Oh my God, you'd be
great. I would love it. What qualifications do you need
Nothing.
To be the Lord Mayor?
I actually met the Lord Mayor today. I was in an Irish language kind of award thing. You are in the morning at 10 o'clock. This is my life. Then I had to go back home and teach a lesson. Then I'm over
and
here and
they'll
be teaching.
So
I'm a great person. But all you have to do, you're right, get
so
into the
county
council.
Council.
So you have to go talk. Do you know Denise Mitchell?
No.
Sinn Féin. She had kids in the Gwedsco in the Coolock as well. Right. We'll need to hook you guys up.
Wouldn't that
right?
be gas doing an RT programme becoming the Lord Mayor?
You would. You would definitely get elected North Dublin.
Yeah,
Dublin,
from Nightmare
North?
To Lord Mayor.
No, do you know where you go?
That's a good name for a programme, isn't it?
I can't see you becoming a councillor.
I'll just stay in that gaff for a year,
counselor.
Bring all my families over. Look,
the
Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be
bring
brilliant.
Them all from England. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the parties did it.
But
all.
You know what I could see happening to you one day, especially if you continue this trajectory you're on.
Breaking into the mansion
house. No, you'd be the marshal of the St. Patrick's Day parade.
Oh,
I'm putting that out there now. Patrick Kilty's doing it this year.
Who's he?
The House of Lords.
Or what I see for you is the Shannon. Senator.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because you could be brought, you're an artist, you're now doing plays, right? You've recovered from addiction.
Hello, I'm the Shannon.
Yes, you get 80 grand for doing almost nothing. You have all the people. You just need to join a party. What party would you join?
The rave party.
I knew you'd say that.
You like that?
The party bugging me
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah.
We're getting whirly sounds from the production box.
Yeah,
we're going to wrap it up.
We're going to wrap.
Give us the wrapping paper.
Aidan, listen, thanks so much for coming in and chatting
to
us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And
it
we
has
wish
been.
You nothing but success.
Nothing but success.
If you're out there,
nothing.
People, Check out Aideen McQueen on our socials. Go and check. If she's doing a gig near you, go and see her. It'll be well worth it. She's
and
really
if you don't go and
does.
See her, we're going to come down to your gaff and drag you over.
Yeah, that's it, Willa.
Yeah.
So there you go, Aideen. Thanks very
Thank
much.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Absolutely fantastic.